from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
It's 6 minutes past the top of the hour. Get ready to get informed. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Thursday, January 27th. Here's what's happening.
The money's going to be spent anyway. The difference is the White House is going to be directing where it's spent, not us. That's our obligation. It's not save any money.
Senator Harry Reid fights the president to keep the power to pay for congressional pet projects.
Look, he used the word jobs 59 times. That's last year he used the word jobs 29 times. This year he used the word investment 11 times to talk about spending. He used it 12 times last year. And what are we going to spend on?
The architect Karl Rove gives his evaluation on the president's plans for the country.
Here goes the bus. They have a lot of trouble getting up this hill.
The East Coast buried under a blanket of snow.
We're sweeping the globe and the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Blanket of snow is an understatement. The nation's capital brought to a standstill. I'm surprised we got to work today, Lori London.
I know. Yesterday it was a mess. Well, thank you so much for being with us on this wintry Thursday, you might say. Well, an all-too-familiar routine along the East Coast as another snowstorm swept over the region from D.C. all the way up to New England. The area already beaten down by a winter that's not even half over. New York area airports among the nation's busiest. Saw hundreds of delayed flights or even canceled flights, hundreds of thousands still without power in the nation's capital, and even the presidential motorcade got stuck yesterday in snowy D.C. traffic.
From the cold northeast to the desert southwest, Arizona expected to set off another seismic immigration wave today when both chambers of its legislature expect to hear the introduction of bills denying citizenship to U.S.-born babies of undocumented immigrants. Republican State Senator Ron Gould said that he and Republican State Representative John Kavanaugh agreed a day for each to introduce this legislation, but Gould said the timetables for consideration of the bills by the separate chambers will diverge at that point.
Well, Cairo in crisis, thousands of anti-government protesters taking to the streets again in a Tunisia-inspired demonstration to demand the end of Hosni Mubarak's nearly 30 years in power. And it apparently has now inspired the same thing in volatile Yemen. Egypt's ruling party says it's ready for dialogue, but is offering no concessions.
And taxpayers, beware. Mr. Obama's plan for the future is going to cost you. President Obama's agenda spelled out in his very well-received State of the Union address would boost spending an additional $20 billion and lead to higher taxes, according to a line-by-line analysis from the National Taxpayers Union Foundation. And this is the controversy that simply refuses to die. We have folks over at NBC in the person of David Gregory that keeps bringing it up. We have the Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie bringing it up. Now, celebrity journalist Mike Evans told a Minnesota radio station last week that his friend, Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie, has been unable to find President Barack Obama's birth certificate despite an intensive search, and now says that there is no birth certificate. The Hawaii governor is a fan of President Obama, and he's worried that this might become an unfortunate 2012 campaign issue again.
There is no Barack Obama birth certificate in Hawaii. Absolutely no proof at all that he was born in Hawaii. Now, he went out, he loves Obama. I mean, he purposely did this to get rid of that question. Now, got some egg in the face. I mean, now he admits publicly that there is no birth certificate. And I asked him, I go, well, when do you remember Barack? When your first memory? And he goes, I remember him playing like in a T-ball league. And I go, like, well, old? He goes, like, he was like 5 or 6, something like that. I go, what about before that? He goes, I don't really remember him much before that, which I find is very odd.
Why is he allowed to be the president of the United States then if he can't prove he's a U.S. citizen?
Well, that's the big question.
I don't know. That's
and now,
weird.
And now Abercrombie is the first to say that he, although he is a Abercrombie as a Obama lover,
right?
That he's concerned that this is going to be is really going to be an issue during the election, re-election.
Well, Chris, according to the Associated Press, the Obama campaign in 2008 issued a certificate of live birth an official document from the state showing the president's birth date, city, and name, along with his parents' names and races.
Yeah, you know what? And as somebody that covers news and is a journalist, tired of this. Really tired of this. And look, Fox News, the day after this whole thing aired, celebrity journalist now claims that he misspoke when he said last week that Hawaii's governor told him that he was unable to find President Barack Obama's original birth certificate. So the guy gets on radio, says something about it, and then immediately the next day starts walking it back. There's your credibility for you.
I think we need to just move on.
Absolutely.
Well, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor says we need to have entitlement programs on the table, and it's time to have an adult conversation about it without all the deceiving rhetoric.
We Republicans in the House have said we got to put everything on the table. Entitlements need to be on the table. The president, although last night didn't speak to specifics, has said that in the past, talked about and referred to his debt commission. I think one of the problems is that you've got Leader Reid in the Senate that says that there aren't any fiscal problems with Social Security. There's a real problem there. I think we all need to come together and say, look, for those 55 and older, we're not going to reduce their entitlement benefits as far as Social Security and Medicare. But when you're talking about folks 54 and younger, we need to talk about the fact that if you're not going to get the benefits you're expecting, or this country will go bankrupt if we don't do something.
I think it's on everybody's radar screen, don't you? Just how much we're actually spending.
I do. And I think it's funny, though, because every campaign we hear, let's get rid of all the rhetoric and just get to business. But it sure doesn't seem to ever go away.
I think 14 trillion reasons right now gives our folks up in Congress an incentive to actually get past all that rhetoric. Well, let's get to some good news here, because we're actually hearing the news just gets better and better and better out of the tragedy in Arizona. Doctors in Houston yesterday offered up the latest update on the upgraded condition of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. She was moved up from the category of serious to good.
Since Gabby arrived last Friday, we have noticed daily improvements in her neurological condition. We're very pleased with that. And in terms of recovery for brain issues, this is really at lightning speed.
We've done our assessment, and as I am speaking here, she is undergoing physical therapy. She'll be receiving physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy this afternoon.
She's awake about as much as you and I are, and so like anybody else, after a long day of physical therapy, she's tired, and when she gets a chance to rest, but 90% of the time when I've gone in to see her, she's been awake, so I think you could, that's been very well.
I can hardly wait for the first press conference when she actually speaks to the nation. That's
we're all so emotionally invested in her now. It's we all know her and we all love her and we all just want to see her get back to her life.
She's got the whole nation behind her, that's for sure. As America's radio news continues, Susan Ferriccio is the chief congressional correspondent for the Washington Examiner. We'll talk to her about the fallout from the State of the Union address.
And some of us may have a real reason to wonder if we'll ever see a dime of our Social Security.
And how does a socialist dictator solve his nation's homeless problems? We'll tell you coming up next as America's Radio News rolls on.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
Read about it tomorrow. Hear it right here today. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us on this Thursday, January 27th. Well, some better economic news. Employers will hire more workers this year, and the economy will grow faster than envisioned 3 months ago. That, according to a new survey by the Associated Press that found growing optimism among leading economists, but unemployment will stay chronically high, nearly 9% by year's end, and a majority of economists say it'll be 2016 or later before unemployment drops to a historically normal rate of about 5%.
And some reinforcement for that report. The number of people applying for unemployment benefits rose sharply last week as snowstorms in some parts of the country forced companies to lay off workers. Applications surged by a seasonally adjusted 51,000 to 454,000, the highest level since late October.
Well, the color-coded Homeland Security Advisory System about to be consigned to history. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano expected to announce the almost nine-year-old threat alert system will go away in April and be replaced by the new National Terror Advisory System that'll focus on specific threats in geographical areas.
And just does how a socialist dictator solve his nation's homeless problem? Well, Venezuela's Hugo Chavez has sent out troops to take over farms and urge the poor to occupy, quote, unused land in wealthy areas of Caracas, prompting a wave of squats that is rattling Venezuela's middle class. The move by Venezuela's president to step up the campaign to, quote, recover land and other property follows a housing crisis that has left millions of people in shabby conditions and affected his popularity in the run-up to next year's election. Back here at home, well, former Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert. He reacts to this week's State of the Union address and explains the need to reduce spending by our federal government.
You know, I think people like Paul Ryan get it. Everybody listened to what he had to say after the president's message. And, of course, when the president talks about investing, that's another word for spending. And what happened in the last 2 years, the federal government has spent almost three times as much as it had since in the 2006 fiscal year. And that was social programs. Basically, the stimulus package was mainly social programs and social spending. And I'm sure that that's what the president wants to, quote, reinvest on and can keep that investment going. So that's the job in Congress, to sort out and make sure that we can really cut down on spending in the federal government, get back to the 2008 level, which is what their intention is. And they're going to have to make some real cuts. And, you know, the sad part is the president walled off a lot of spending, defense and other things. And when you really get into, real appropriated spending, you're only down to about a third of what the federal government spends. And you wall it off, you're down to an awful small amount.
Now, Denny is a Republican, but something he ought to remember, and a lot of Americans ought to remember, the past two presidents, one from each major political party, responsible for half of this monstrous sum that we're looking at today. That's according to the Associated Press. About half of today's national debt was run up in the past 6 years. It soared from $7.6 trillion in January of 2005, as President George W. Bush began his second term, to $10.6 trillion when Mr. Obama was inaugurated, and then soared from there to $14.02 trillion and climbing. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around.
Very differing views on how to fix this.
Let's hope they all come together and actually get it solved.
Let's hope so. Well, if you didn't watch this week's State of the Union address on ABC, you might have missed this. Very theatrical introduction. ABC News kicked off the speech on Tuesday night with something that looked and sounded very much like a movie trailer, maybe a little melodramatic.
We heard this just 2 years ago.
Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
We heard this just 2 months ago.
I'm not recommending for every future president that they take a shellacking like I did last night.
And we heard this just 2 weeks ago when tragedy struck.
We should do everything we can do to make sure this country lives up to our children's expectations.
With so much at stake, what do Americans want to hear tonight? We'll hear what some Americans said to that in three words. And now the question is, what will the president say to unite a country anxious to move beyond bitter debate and to a newly divided Congress looking for ways to unite? From ABC News, in our nation's capital, the State of the Union address and the Republican response. Now reporting, Diane Sawyer and George Stephanopoulos.
And the curtain goes up, and the action begins. Get the popcorn.
Yeah, here comes Schwarzenegger blasting his way. I want to see something from the State of the Union. Oh, that was hilarious. Speaking of something hilarious, Congressman Charlie Rangel, of all people, trying to talk about what we need to do as a nation to get our fiscal house in order and fix our tax system.
When you start closing loopholes, it's a question of who is getting the preferential treatment. So everybody says, yes, simplify the system, get rid of the loopholes, but not their own. It cannot be done unless Republicans and Democrats join hands and sit down, not just sit with each other, but work with each other. But yes, we can reduce our corporate tax rate from 35% to get it down to below 25%. But we cannot do that unless we raise the money, raise the revenue by closing out the unfair presidential prejudicial type of treatment that's given to some corporations.
Oh, man. Didn't this guy get censured for fiscal problems? Yes, he did. America's Radio News continues. Segregated schools in this day and age? It's happening. We'll tell you where.
And has prom night, the love fest, all but ended on Capitol Hill?
It's America's Radio News. Right back. This is where America's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
34 minutes past the top of the hour. If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. Happy to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. On this Thursday, January 27th, here's what's happening.
The money's going to be spent anyway. The difference is the White House is going to be directing where it's spent, not us. That's our obligation. It doesn't save any money.
Senator Harry Reid fights the president to keep the power to pay for congressional pet projects.
Look, he used the word jobs 59 times. That's last year he used the word jobs 29 times. This year he used the word investment 11 times to talk about spending. He used it 12 times last year. And what are we going to spend on?
The architect Karl Rove gives his evaluation on the president's plans for the country.
Here goes the bus. They have a lot of trouble getting up this hill.
The East Coast buried under a blanket of snow.
We're sweeping the globe and the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Coming to you live from the nation's capital, Lori London and myself were out in this miserable weather yesterday gripping the Northeast. I'm amazed we made it to where we were going.
Took 2 hours to get, 5 miles?
Exactly. It was terrible.
Well, as millions of baby boomers stand at the brink of retirement, new congressional projections show Social Security running deficits every year until trust funds are eventually drained in 2037. This year alone, Social Security projecting to collect $45 billion less in payroll taxes than it pays out in retirement, disability, and survivor benefits. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office is reporting that today.
One state is taking another step toward voter identification. With a strong push from Republicans and over vigorous objections by Democrats, the Texas Senate approved legislation requiring all but elderly Texans to show a photo ID before voting. Most of the proposed amendments to the bill offered by Democrats were rejected during several hours of debate on Wednesday, but one change found bipartisan support. That added a state concealed handgun license to the list of photo IDs that would meet the requirement of the legislation.
Well, an all-too-familiar routine along the East Coast as another snowstorm swept over the region, already beaten down by a winter not half over the New York area airports. Among the nation's busiest, saw hundreds of delayed or canceled flights, hundreds of thousands without power in the nation's capital, and even the presidential motorcade got stuck in the snowy D.C. traffic.
Can you believe this? In 2011, a high school has defended its decision to segregate students by race and gender. The scheme at McCaskey East High School in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, separates black students from the rest of the school pupils and then further breaks it down into black females and black males. The separation is only for a short period, 6 minutes each day and 20 minutes twice a month, but it has drawn criticism for raising the specter of racial segregation. The school's principal defended the policy, saying the school noticed that black students were not performing as well as other students and that research had shown that same race classes with strong same-race role models led to better academic results.
A car bomb ripped through a funeral tent in a mainly Shiite area of Baghdad today, the deadliest in a series of attacks that have killed at least 40 people. The blasts were the latest in more than a week of bombings that killed more than 200 people, raising concerns about the uptick in violence as the U.S. military prepares to withdraw.
All right, let's head to the newsmaker line. Chris Horner standing by. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the author of Power Grab, How Obama's Green Policies Will Steal Your Freedom and Bankrupt America. Chris, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
So, now I got to ask you about this. You know, a lot of conservatives are into competition. Green, I can't tell you how many Americans tell me they'd rather, when the gas prices get up to $3, $4 a gallon, how they like to have an option at the pump. What's the matter with having another option?
Well, we would the state can't create these options is the problem, and when they do, they choose them for political reasons. When they try, they choose them for political reasons, and they choose from a line of losers who are standing at the trough of government with their hat out, their hand out, because they can't find investors in a market that's provided investors and success for the snuggy and Vince the ShamWow guy, but somehow has overlooked windmills and solar panels, which the president actually calls new technology. Now, wind-powered electricity did only come online in 91, but it was 1891. It's a failure.
Well, what's wrong with the government offering incentives or tax breaks for alternative energy? We need it.
Well, I'm not sure what we mean by need, because we have centuries of coal. We have more than a century of natural gas. We have more than a century, maybe about a century of petroleum. And we continually are using it more efficiently. That is, producing more GDP, getting more miles per unit of energy. So if you say we need to supplement, okay, but there are probably other ways to do it. We have nuclear power, but we don't want to. It's been over 25 years now because a Hollywood movie scared people, along with an incident that was not an accident or did cause no fatalities or injuries in Pennsylvania, badly timed with a Hollywood movie. We're talking about, we claim incentives to do what? To put up something that's utterly uneconomic. That costs about, according to the administration, the Council of Economic Advisors issued a report saying for $90 billion in stimulus money, they created 190,000 temporary green jobs. That's $450,000 per temporary job.
No, Chris, I think a lot of I think conservatives will agree with you that the least efficient way to get anything done is to give government money and let them do it. I guess that what I would like to focus you in on is, like, you know, hey, the fact of the matter is that Americans right now, when they go to the pump and they're pumping $4, $3, $4 a gallon in their gas tank, where do they go for an alternative? There's no competition for oil. There's no competition for gasoline. So Americans have no choice. Isn't conservatism based on choice?
Right. And so why don't we have the choice to, when they say we have to reduce our dependence on foreign sources of energy, why isn't the solution to produce more domestic sources of energy? Did you know, despite claiming we have only X percent of the world's proven reserves, that's sleight of hand. It's been illegal for 25 years to look where the geologists tell us most of the hydrocarbons are. So what we need to do is, if you want to reduce our dependence on foreign sources or you want more gasoline in the market, let us produce our own. America actually sits on the world's largest energy resources, the largest in the world. But our politicians, in order to get us off of what we have a lot of, and the people don't like paying a lot for and don't have to pay a lot for, say, well, we only have X amount of proven reserves, and they make it unlawful to look. Well, let's drop that. Let's drill here, drill now. We sit on the world's largest resources. Why do we say that there cannot have, as the response to reducing our dependence on foreign sources, producing more domestically? Instead, they say if I throw money at something divined by politicians, we will create flubber or pixie dust. There's no evidence after decades of $8 gas and windmill mandates in Europe that they're any closer to flubber or pixie dust. Why is it suddenly going to happen here?
But isn't it possible that we could be doing it at the expense of our natural resources, at decimating some of our natural resources?
Using them. Yeah, we should use them.
No, I'm saying, isn't it possible we could be destroying them in the process of this?
I suppose anything's possible. I'm not sure what you mean by using natural resources, our energy resources, or are we saying there's a hypothetical chance that we are causing some catastrophic environmental? So far, all the claims of catastrophe have proven to be unfounded. Yeah. The beaches in the sky remain just where we left them as children, and they keep coming up with new ones.
Well, look at the Gulf oil spill.
Yeah, it went from the greatest environmental accident of our time, according to Carol Browner, to there's nothing to see here. The bacteria ate 75% of it, according to the same person, Carol Browner. It turns out that nothing is nothing. Driving.
I think it's going to take years before we really know the damage there.
Of course, kill millions in the process. You could eliminate driving. You could keep the speed limit at 25 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. There are costs to all actions and all inactions. We know that our energy resources produce wealth and make us richer, freer, and safer.
Wanted to touch really quickly. You touched on this this whole idea of nature and catastrophe. And really quickly, you know, one of the stories that doesn't get out very much is that this IPCC report out there from the United Nations where we were told that 2,500 scientists had consensus that man was causing global warming. Now, the unreported report that just happened here recently is that many of those scientists, about 1,000 of them now, are actually dissenting from that original opinion, but that doesn't seem to be getting reported.
Yeah, 2,500 scientists never signed off on anything.
Yep.
There were 2,500 people
They were called the world's leading climate scientists. Upon scrutiny, they turned out to be anthropology teaching assistants, true story, transport policy instructors, instructors in something called the human dimension of environmental change, group hug. It wasn't 2,500 world's leading climate scientists. And when they lie about the little stuff, as we've learned, they'll lie about the big stuff.
They were never asked.
They all just put their name on it.
His name is Chris Horner. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and author of Power Grab, How Obama's Green Policies Will Steal Your Freedom and Bankrupt America. Chris, it was great having you on America's Radio News.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
All right, coming up here in the next segment, Will Ferrell. He's making a surprise appearance, well, on an NBC show that's going to be minus a comedian. We'll tell you which one.
And Justin Bieber and Ozzy Osbourne teaming up. We'll tell you what that's about.
And we'll get you an And we'll get you an update on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, the Democrat from Arizona. Things are looking really good as far as she's concerned. We'll give you the status right here on America's Radio News. This is where America's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news
so you don't have to.
If it breaks today, hear it today
when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
Hear about it now, and you can read about it tomorrow. This is America's Radio News. Glad you're with us. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Great to have all of you here. The foreclosure crisis getting worse as high unemployment and lackluster job prospects force more homeowners into an increasingly number of U.S. metropolitan areas into dire financial straits. Seattle, Houston, Chicago, cities relatively insulated from foreclosures early on now. They're more and more seeing problems with mortgage payments, finding themselves on the receiving end of foreclosure warnings.
An update now on U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords. The Democrat from Arizona has begun an intensive rehabilitation program that includes conditioning and exercises to build strength and increase her range of motion. Doctors in Houston upgraded her status from serious to good.
Well, the global number of Muslims continues to grow. 20 years ago, the world had 1.1 billion. 20 years from now, it is predicted to be twice as many, and they'll represent more than a quarter of all people on Earth. That, according to a new study released today, that's a rise from less than 20% in 1990. The study estimates the number of Muslims in the U.S. will double, more than double, to 6.2 million.
And all you fans of The Office, check this out. With Steve Carell stepping down of NBC's The Office, producers have enlisted Will Ferrell to help boost the show's numbers during the season home stretch. Ferrell will reunite with his Anchorman co-star in a four-episode arc later in the season. He'll play a branch manager who arrives from the home office and proves to be just as inept as Michael Scott.
Well, looks like John Travolta is going to play the ultimate tough guy in an upcoming film. Get this. The actor's reportedly signed on to play the legendary mobster John Gotti in the upcoming biopic.
I see that.
James Franco, rumored to be under consideration to play the late mob boss's son. The film will reportedly focus on the Gambino crime family in New York City.
This is something you have just got to hear. Apparently, Barack Obama's call for more civility in the State of the Union address fell on deaf ears in the Keystone State. Pennsylvanian legislators descended into a shouting and catcalls during a committee hearing, with Democrats accusing Republicans of a power grab and Republicans convinced the state Democrats were guilty of obstruction.
Are you telling us we can't debate into the bill anymore? Is that what you're saying?
I give you an opportunity for Representative Durham to make your speech. Please
take a roll. We have members of the Rules Committee.
You can have a
appropriate
debate on the House floor.
They have a right to speak.
May I speak?
Please take a roll.
May I speak?
They have a right to speak.
May I speak?
Stifle us here, too?
You can't.
We have members of this committee who have a right to speak. Joe Marcosi.
Roll call vote.
Thank you. Joe Marcosi.
Mr. Chairman.
Joe Marcosi.
Mr. Chairman.
You're out of order,
Mr. Chairman.
Please take a roll call vote.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Joe Marcosi is left. He died. Please take a roll call vote.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
keep going with your debate.
Mr. Chairman,
this is an outrageous attempt to stifle us, to stifle the people of Pennsylvania. You should be ashamed.
Yeah, getting a lot done there, aren't they?
Civility is really...
Yeah.
Wow. Well, John Boehner was asked whether or not the seating arrangements during the State of the Union prom night with Republicans seated next to Democrats helped the atmosphere in the chamber.
Well, I don't know whether date night helped, but it was nice to see members spread out. The vice president and I were not going to engage in the constantly jumping up and down and clapping. This is the State of the Union. The president comes here at the invitation of the Congress. And the Congress, in my view, ought to respect the fact that the president has accepted the invitation. And there ought to be more dignity at this event. Last night was better than what we've seen in the past. Not as dignified as I'd like to see it, but we're moving in the right direction.
Well, you know, I noticed that John Boehner didn't cry.
No, he
looked like he almost had a moment there.
He came close, and the president of the United States
acknowledged him.
Yeah.
He did look like he was almost. I was like, come on, bring on the waterworks.
And you know what the speaker was making reference to, the standing up and clapping thing. Conservative circles referred to Nancy Pelosi as the jack in the box behind the president. Every single time he would say something she liked, she was up in her seat and clapping very much. So that was a direct swipe at the former speaker of the House of Representatives. Speaking of somebody that, really doesn't know when to keep their mouth shut, daughter of John McCain, Meghan McCain, sounded off on the Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, the 26-year-old Daily Beast columnist, blasted her for her Tea Party rebuttal to the president's State of the Union address, calling her, quote, the poor man's Sarah Palin.
Michelle Bachmann is not a leader, and she's not the leader of the Republican Party. Michelle Bachmann, in my opinion, is no better than a poor man's Sarah Palin. And I think the fact that MSNBC and Fox elected not to run this is admirable to the kind of journalism Fox and MSNBC is airing. I think CNN should be ashamed of themselves for airing this. It is one rogue woman who couldn't even look into the camera directly. And I take none of it seriously. And I think if the Tea Party wants to put a candidate up to give a response, why don't they have someone like Rand Paul, who was elected on the Tea Party platform, give that?
Meghan McCain, I think she's poising herself for a run for something. She's never made it a secret that she's not really a fan of Sarah Palin.
Right. Good luck with that. Good luck with that.
Okay.
All right. Senator Webb, you know, he fields the big question about whether or not he plans to campaign for re-election in 2012 now that
how about that, particularly inside my family? You know, it's an 8-year commitment for us. It's not, people get excited about elections, but it's 8 years. So I've said that I'll make a decision before the end of the first quarter, and we will.
Is there some hesitation there? If you look at your fundraising, a lot of people would say, especially if, you know, you're going to have a big high-profile race in 2012, you better start raising money. You have delayed doing that. I know it's not your favorite thing in the world. Where's your head at the moment? Leaning in, leaning out?
Well, I don't want to be out asking people for money unless, you know, they can be certain that I'm going to use it for a campaign. I mean, when you go back to the 06 campaign, I announced 9 months almost to the day before the election with $0 and no campaign staff, and we were 33 points behind, and we raised enough to win. I don't want to go through that process again, but I'm not worried about the fundraising side. This is much more personal family decision that we have to resolve.
Lori London, you tell me, does he really sound like he's ready to go after it for his Senate seat in 2012?
Maybe that's just his personality.
Maybe he's a little more even keel. I don't know. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Coming up here in the next hour of America's Radio News, Patrice Hill, the chief economic correspondent for the Washington Times. She'll be in to talk about the state of the U.S. economy.
And an uprising in volatile Yemen brings more instability to an Al-Qaeda haven.
And bills denying birthright citizenship to folks born in Arizona. We'll tell you the latest on that as America's Radio News rolls on.